Hi, this is Chase Bethea, and you're listening to the Sound Architect Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the Sound Architect Podcast. I am your host, Sam Hughes, and as you just heard, today I'm joined by composer Chase Bethea. Thanks for joining me today, Chase. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing quite well. Thank you, Sam, for having me on. I really appreciate it. I'm very excited.
It's an absolute pleasure. And to be honest, we spoke a few years ago and did a written interview, so it's nice to actually have you on the show and I get to talk to you.
Yeah, that is quite a blast. Just love speaking about, you know, the little things that we can nerd out about and go forward with. You know, it's always a joy and a pleasure.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's why I do this, right?
Exactly.
I just want to nerd out with people. That's the whole thing. Like, so it's been a while since we last spoke. What have you been up to?
Wow. Yeah, quite a bit, I would have to say. So since then, I shipped a game. I shipped two games, actually, this year.
Nice.
Worked
Congrats.
On three. Thank you. And the one that shipped, which has the most notoriety to date, is Aground, which shipped April 17th of this year. And that soundtrack, I believe, is coming out for the deluxe version this Friday, November 20th.
Oh, nice.
So I'm pretty excited about that. And then I did a Ludum Dare jam, last month. And it got the top rated for that jam. It was in the number three top ratings, and then it actually shipped on Android. So that was like a random
ship. Oh, very cool.
Game.
That's awesome. And
then, thank you. And then, yeah, since then, I've spoken at a myriad of conferences and guest talks and panels. I've done almost like 10 or 11 before the end of the year is like complete. One of them being Audio Developers Conference, which I'll be speaking at tomorrow.
So you've been very busy.
Yeah, I've been keeping myself there. And you know what's interesting is that in January of this year, that wasn't the case at all. I was doing a lot of music sample library demos and trying to work on a different album. And then the pandemic hit, and then actually got a game project like right at the pandemic. And I was like, wow, this is cool. And it was actually one of my biggest projects to date that haven't shipped just yet. But it was quite interesting because I got to work with adaptive composition, which is something I'm mostly enamored with now, I have to say. That's what the talk is going to kind of be about at Audio Developers Conference. But speaking at GameSoundCon earlier this year, I saw that there was a lot of talk about like audio middleware, and Elias was not on that conversation platform. And I had used Elias to work on that project that had started in March. And so I really wanted to put them on the map and give them some shine and everything. So I've kind of been all over the place, but yeah, there's quite a lot going on.
Yeah, and I'd love to talk to you a bit more about how you used Elias, because obviously a lot of people are aware of things like Wise and FMod and a few other bits and bobs, but Elias have been around a little while now, but you kind of very few and far between know about it at the moment, but it is quite a useful tool, if I believe.
Yeah, it's been around for, I would say, 4 to 5 years. And every GDC, I would go over there and talk to the developers and say hi to Christopher. And I believe at the time, Dale Crowley was working there.
Yeah.
And, you know, hang out with them. And everybody, and of course, like the Wise booth is like bumbling and doing well, and they're all great. And FMod is doing good. And I kind of just hang around and I'm just very curious. So I just was thinking about, how am I going to be able to use this one day? And then the opportunity came this year, and I've found the workflow to be the best for me in terms of taking your music creations from whatever DAW that you're using and implementing it into Elias, and then having that control, and then the integration even from the API for directly into Unity or Unreal is extremely smooth and seamless. And so that's what really hooked me. And it was also in line with my thought process of just being autonomous and not really having to rely on the programmer as much. And when I listened to a couple of interviews that the software developers did, I think earlier this year, they mentioned that. And I realized before I had listened to an interview, this is why it works for me, because this is exactly the type of mindset that I have in terms of having the composer be in control of everything that you can do to have the best game audio you can possibly have.
Nice. And what is it about your thought process that Elias kind of catered to more?
I think it's terms of, I mean, I'm giving you some of the things away. I'm speaking about the talk, but it's all good. It's tomorrow anyway.
Spoilers,
scoops. We're all familiar with vertical and horizontal composition of some sort. And so what I introduce in my mind in terms of that is, okay, if I want to, the way that Elias software is set up is almost in that format, whereas in you have to think vertically and horizontally, and I'm okay with either doing or, because I understand how to do that in the music creation software right off the bat.
Yeah.
So if you pre-plan that and you get your mindset together about that ahead of time, the implementation for the Elias process is just that alone, because they use levels, and then they go deeper into some of their other specific sets, for such as level strategy based off of a horizontal format, whereas in you'll select different tracks or instrument sets that you've already set up to be triggered by certain key events. And then there's a workflow that gives you opportunities between theme settings of tracks, or there's action presets, which are triggered through Unity, or level selections that I mentioned, which are triggered in Unity as well, based off of whatever collider or event trigger that you need to happen in the game to be as such. And the biggest thing I find is just fiddling around with the transitions. There's a transition settings you can set per level that you want. And yeah, you have a lot of flexibility for really big fades that are indicative of whatever type of musical style you've written. So ambient will have dramatic fades for seamless or faster transitions for maybe orchestral high bid action cues or things like that.
Man, that sounds super fascinating. You use that, you can't say which project you've used that on at the moment, can you?
Oh, I can say most of them.
Oh, you can?
All I can say for the one that I know that it hasn't shipped yet is it's called Potions Please.
Right.
And the other ones I've actually done a lot of demos for. One is coming up is called, I believe it's called Hiboka. And then the other one, I did a game jam. This is the one that I really got to experiment the most. And just talking to the developer just before this chat we're having is Space Marmalade. Whereas it's a space tactic battleship style type of game, whereas you're moving from a different plane field so it will change from a cylindrical form to a 2D form. So you have space strategy, and when you're into combat mode, then you'll have a different plane field of where things are kind of moving. But it's like a chess space tactic battleship type of simulation.
Oh, wow.
And I designed the music to match whatever strategy turn that you'll have, where it's always going to be different. And then in combat mode, obviously, when it enters that seamlessly to transition into that.
Man, that sounds pretty cool.
Thank you.
So I'd like to hear a bit more about Aground as well, especially as at time of recording, as you say, the deluxe album releases this Friday.
Yes, this is taking quite some time. So I'm on the Materia Collective label, and they are helping distribute this deluxe version, because the original soundtrack came out, I think it came out last year in August. So that everything pre-DLC of Aground before actual ship time is out on that soundtrack. But the deluxe version is going to feature like some sheet music selections, which I'm very excited for. It's the first time in a long time, I would say, that my music has been transcribed for, piano and such. So there's that. And then obviously the DLC tracks that I had did that shipped with the game. So there's going to be those. And then I also added in rejection tracks, because we all have those, right?
Yeah.
Tracks always that are not always received and, altered and changed. And working in indie development, you have this flexibility to kind of release those, especially if you negotiate, your contract is such and you own the soundtrack rights, which I do. So it's really good to release those type of tracks for at least the community, who are really excited for the soundtrack overall. Like, they love the music, and I'm very thankful to the fans that do, because the player base is over like 3 million.
Oh, wow.
At least 3 million people around the world have played, the game. And then console ports are coming out finally as well. So that was the reason to kind of align you know, such things. And I'm promised, at least by the publisher, that the console ports are happening for, you know, Nintendo and Xbox. It's going to be digital, so it's not. If another new console just shipped last week or this week, right? So it's, yeah, so it's, yeah, last week they shipped, you know, PS5 and Xbox Series X. But the digital versions of Ground are going to be, you know, on those, people can play. And the soundtrack is supposed to kind of help with the push of that in terms of marketing and more fun. So you have rejection tracks, DLC tracks, sheet music, and it's going to be a big bundle.
Oh man, yeah, you get quite a lot in the deluxe release. Like, so it's pretty cool. And it's like, well worth bearing in mind when you say about rejection tracks, right? I think it's kind of nice for composers as well to be reminded that that is the case and it's okay. And it's kind of cool that you're releasing the kind of rejection tracks alongside this album.
Yeah, I like them. Even though the developer may have not thought that they fit well, I like them. And I called them the Aggroundians in terms of the community. I believe the Aggroundians, they, like I said, I received so many accolades and good messages from them. I spoke about this in some of the talks that I did for, you know, Pixel Pop and Game Sound Con, that some of the tracks that I wrote helped people through their depression.
Oh, wow.
Some of them said that I was a God's gift to music. Some of them related to me to like Brian Eno and Aphex Twins. And so it's quite an honor, especially someone, I mean, I'm humble, a little indie composer, you know, just doing my thing, trying to keep it moving, composing for games because I love it. And this is my way of reciprocating and doing the good stuff for, to produce more and show them like, hey, you know, yeah, these were things that weren't accepted because you love the game so much. These were my ideas. You know, if you like that stuff, you can see where this kind of stemmed from, where this didn't. And then even, I guess, the developer even used there's some tracks in there and it was for a different game and it wasn't released with the album. The Grounders are like, hey, where's that one track? And I felt very weird about releasing it. And I was like, that was a pitch for a different game. It really actually wasn't designed for the Ground thing, but yeah, they really want it. So I threw it in there. And so they'll be able to have that as well. Everything that they've wanted and I guess the developer also used, like, talk about having temp tracks of your own, they used from a different game I shipped with them. They used it in this game well, so it's almost like an Easter egg tracks of some sort.
Oh,
even
nice.
Though I've already shipped that one, and I'm like, okay, well, it's a maelstrom and a mix up of things that are happening with this one. But I guess I really wanted to feel like Deluxe was, you know, justified, because I don't see another version of, you know, the Ground thing coming out for this, for the music. I'm pretty tapped out.
You've got enough on there, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
So just for the benefit of our listeners then, what was the type of game that Aground is?
So Aground is a game where you mostly are just mining for resources, but the theme about Aground is about progression. Mm-hmm. You can take a magic path or a science path, and if you want double dragons, like literally two different, raise a dragon and ride a dragon, you can do that. If you want to create a spaceship dragon and take it up into space, you can.
Oh wow, that's cool.
If you want to do a spaceship, you know, type of thing, because you're on the science path, you can, or wherever path that you want, or even with the latest, I would say, release that happened a couple months ago, it's called the hybrid path, you can do both. So if you want to split the difference and do magic and science, and then there's an ending for that too. So the thing about it is there's progression. There's some, you know, it's about survival, crafting, like most, you know, theme games that are related to. But there are endings for each. And so there is an end to it. Now you can spend as little as 300 hours. You can spend what one of my friends put like 1800 hours or something, just because you love it and you want to line and craft more and create more. There's a lot to do. And because of the different paths that you can take, you have a lot of flexibility, because you start off on an island and then you realize there are other islands, which leads you to those paths that you take. And then those islands may lead you off the planet, and then you may discover other planets as well.
Awesome. That sounds super cool. And what kind of genre were you asked to write for?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So believe it or not, I was not asked to write for anything. It was just given to me to do as I want.
Oh, that's awesome. Open brief.
Yeah. But that is also scary. And the
yeah, I the mean, lack it of boundaries.
Exactly. And it's so funny you mentioned boundaries, is because that ended up being the theme of Aground. It's called No Boundaries, No Sky Limit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, and that's what I think manifested. And it's interesting because it took me 3 months to write the theme. They weren't very happy with me. And even though because they wanted to get the prototype out, but it took me that long because I couldn't figure out what the game was telling me. And I always listen to what the game is telling me as I'm listening and I'm playing or I'm reading the document, and I couldn't figure it out. And as much as I played, it didn't occur to me until I realized I had to really craft the sound palette very specifically.
Yeah.
Because the art style was extremely customized. It wasn't like anything that I have seen or experienced before, and I was having fun. And so I realized you're going to spend a lot of time in this game, obviously, like resources and do such. I can't have the tracks be monotonous. I cannot have it be boring. And that led me to just creating whatever I created with the sound palette and synths and musical influence that I had. And so it evolved with the game over time, which is, like I said, it aligned to the theme of progression. And even I watched one streamer, and he says, I'm trying to figure out what this music sound reminds me of the game of. And he pauses for 1 second, 2 seconds, and he says, yeah, I can't figure it out, which means I created something completely new that even I don't even know what it is. But it's semi-nostalgic to people who love, you know, video game 90 music, but yeah, it's still modern.
Okay, so like retro modern-ish.
yeah. Long story short, retro modern.
Nice. And you've been working on some other things as well. There's been Aztec Ride, isn't there?
Yes, Aztec Ride, which was that Ludum Dare 47 game jam we just did last month. And yeah, that was quite interesting because I was a day late. The developers I had met at a virtual conference this year and did message me on randomly, say, hey, do you want to do music for this jam? And I was like, yeah, sure, I can do that. And it was, I think, a day or two before Game Sound Con was going to happen and my talk was going to happen. And so I streamed the music that I was doing live, and I made it in 4 hours. And then I did the sound effects the next day. And I was trying to recreate the Wilhelm scream, and that ended up being the main laugh of the game. And people really love, but the audio and the music, everybody loves, you know, the best. And the art style is great. But yeah, we practically did a 3-day game jam in 2 days.
Oh, wow. And is it like getting an official release and everything?
Yeah, so I was told that they had submitted it for the Google Play Store and that they were behind because of the pandemic. And then that was a message one day. And I think like 3 days later, I think it was a Friday, it was like, it's out now on Android. And I was like, oh, thanks for the heads up. Yeah, please promote. And I was like, well, thanks for the heads up. I'm trying to promote. You told me that it was going to take some time. I'm thinking it's going to be a month and not 3 days.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, it's tight.
So, yeah. And then, like I said, so many accolades, people saying they'd love to see it on mobile. You know, when it was highly rated, the jam finished, we were in the top three of the highly rated. We didn't win anything, but like overall it was the most well known. And it's quite interesting, like I think that actually brought me a bit of small fame too, because some people are starting to recognize it, like, oh yeah, you're the person who did the music for Aztec Ride. So I'm actually floored, thinking like, wow, like the jam took off that much, whereas I'm a tiny bit famous for doing that game. And I'm thankful too, because I had no idea, again, what Aztec roller coaster music was going to sound like.
I mean, who like, does? I can't imagine it was like, you know, quite common entertainment back then.
Yeah, it was quite fun though at the same time, because I was able to record some live instruments. I had a native flute that my mom bought me I've had it since I was a child, and it's traveled with me, you know, all the places I've been around, you know, this far. And so it's cool to use those things that you use in your childhood and bring it in. And then the little weird instruments like pencil drums and djembes that friends have given you, and then, you know, conflate it together to make an Aztec Ride soundtrack of some sort.
Man, yeah. I mean, because it's basically a theme park ride is the idea, right?
Right. It's just two controls going backwards and forwards. Give your riders a thrill, but you need to, in the mobile version, you just need to kind of at least hit the three badges of completing, you know, the loop with at least some passengers and enough fuel and getting to the end. And that's the goal. But there on the PC version, you just have to complete the loop, because the Ludum Dare theme was stuck in a loop. So it wasn't, that you just have to complete the loop with enough fuel on the PC, or you need to throw the players out of the coaster to gain fuel. And so it's a little two-sided sword type of thing.
Oh, wow. Sounds fun, though.
It is. My girlfriend doesn't play a lot of games, but she says, I hear, which is my voice. And I'm like, oh, she's playing the game.
And just they love you it. Screaming, and, flying off this Aztec ride.
Yeah. And I don't think anything of it. I literally am like, we need a new Wilhelm scream. It's been a long time. And so that's my effort at that one. But people,
a really, little homage. People really dig it.
Yes, pretty much.
Nice. And, you know, what else are you working on at the moment that you can tell us about?
Oh, right now, I'm still working on that Space Marmalade tactic game, which I'm actually quite fascinated with, because I didn't really achieve, you know, even the audio mob jam was only a month, and I love month jams. That's how I got started in this whole thing anyway with games and, you know, at least publishing things. But that's still continuing. And so I get to work on that still. Oh, I'm actually scoring a Monster Hunter Pokemon Go type game called Questlight Pocket. And I'm hoping to at least have some live players on that soundtrack more, because I think it could really benefit from that. I mean, we all know how Pokemon Go kind of took off. So if you just think of like Monster Hunter in that style, like that's really going to be fun. And I love both of those games.
Yeah, that's cool. So yeah, I wanted to ask you actually about your influences and in terms of composers and video games. Where did you draw your inspirations from as you were getting into music composition?
I think it started right along the lines of being a young boy with a Game Boy, playing the games on them and figuring out that there were sound tests. And as you were playing the game, you know, you hear the music, but then some music you think you can go to that spot and you just have it on loop. So I'm influenced a lot by a lot of Japanese composers, such as Kenji Ito, obviously, you know, the infamous Nobuo Uematsu.
Yeah, of course. He's my favorite.
Yeah, he's a lot of favorites. Also, Koetani, who scored Shadow Colossus, Masashi Yamayuzu, who's, you know, a classic, and Junya Nakano, he's also well-known as, you know, some of the really good ones. And I would have to also say, like, Yoko Shimomura, because I realized in Parasite Eve, she really rocked that one. And then Street Fighter 2 on Game Boy as well.
Oh, like, man, yes.
those are really good. Those are really good. And you know, obviously, Yuzo Koshiro. And then I'm also influenced by a little bit of, you know, Bernard Herrmann and Tim Follin. Are you familiar with Tim Follin?
I'm actually not, no.
He's a fantastic British composer. He did Pictionary. He did Time Tracks. He did Echo Defender of the Future on PlayStation 2 and Dreamcast, which is a highly recommended soundtrack by me if you like that type of ambient type of style. He really rocked that one. He did a ton of other, you know, game soundtracks. And I'm also influenced by Jesper Kude. Subconsciously, I grew up with this music and realized it was music, but then as an overall time, like, yeah, definitely Jesper Kude is on that list as well. So the list runs long and there's plenty more, but those are the ones that come to my mind.
Nice. And what about like any specific games in the last couple of years that has really spoken to you with their music?
I would have in the past couple of games. I'm a huge retro gamer as well, but I really, in the past couple of years, I have to think about some of the games. Some of these are going to sound like quite old, and I do play some new games, but I the newest game I have to say that has really influenced me is the Breath of the Wild music. The series of composers
so
really
good.
Impressed me. Yeah, it's phenomenal, and their approach to it all in terms of how I think of it as like a piano concerto, because that's what it really sounds like to me if I was to kind of isolate it. And because it's really you're hearing a lot more piano than anything else, you know, from all across the board of all the compositions. And then a lot of people like Nier Automata, but I really was struck with Nier Gestalt, or if you, depending on what country you're in, Nier Replicant or Nier Gestalt.
Yes, the new one.
The predecessor.
Oh, the predecessor. Oh, sorry. I was trying to remember the name of the new one that's coming out. That's a remake of the original. It gets confusing sometimes.
Yeah, and it does because... Yeah, exactly. Nier Replicant was released in, I guess, in different countries with that name, and Nier Gestalt was in the States.
Yeah.
But everybody loves any of the Nier's stuff, obviously.
Yeah, it's beautiful music.
It really is. And so I find myself really enthralled with that and enamored. A throwback, though, I want to always give a shout out is Eternal Ring. And I want to mention Eternal Ring because I think it's a hidden gem. It's from Software's earliest games, and it was released in 2000. And it doesn't get a good rep for, and I think it doesn't get a good rep for relation of comparison, which I don't think is fair. It's like, well, it has terrible voice acting and the instruments aren't this and so on. And you have to say, okay, well, let's think about this for a second. Yeah. In the year of 2000, you didn't have Last of Us. So that's not quite fair to say, you know, that it was, you know, things are terrible. You know, you should probably be comparing it to at least things such as like Legend of Dragoon or Beyond Good and Evil, you know, things that probably came out on that platform to compare to, not Last of Us. So
yeah, I mean, I guess that's the struggle when games they get a bit outdated quite quickly if it's not one of the top AAA titles at the time, you know, and even then sometimes they don't age gracefully all the time.
Right.
So it's hard to compare games as you go through time, you know, once you look back and you're like, oh no, that's terrible, the acting's awful and this, that and the other, and you're like, man, this is like, you know, it's a few years old now, like can't compare it to the recent releases.
Exactly. But from Software, that game, Eternal Ring, is, I think there, it is a really good game. It's like a first person Dark Souls.
Yeah.
And if you're a From Software fan, like I am, then you really appreciate it. Now, I'm terrible at anything first person. Like I didn't get good at first person shooters until I scored one for a game jam called Reclaim Earth. Like that's how bad it was until I got good. And then, But I beat that game, Eternal Ring. And so, like I said, to be terrible at something, but to have enough patience and enjoy the gameplay style, like that speaks volumes that game is, you know, is well balanced and good. And the music grows on you so much. And you really got to take a listen at first. And I was talking quite a lot of mess on it. And in the beginning, it's like, what is this? Like, this doesn't make any sense. This is the style. And then all of a sudden, just in love, just completely
everything
enamored.
Just clicked. And then that was
that was it. And so I'd have to get, and they had a re-release, I think, and I'm glad that they did, I think a year ago with the game. So you can get it on the PlayStation Store and play it with new lighting, because I know that was the biggest struggle for most people, is like the lighting is just really bad. But yeah, besides that, I highly recommend that one too.
Nice. I want to go back to something you said earlier, actually, which is how you were saying that it was much quieter back in January. And obviously, like as a composer, most of the time, like yourself, it's freelance, right?
Right.
So you have to hustle. You have to get your own gigs all the time. You know, you have to kind of keep busy to keep busy, you know?
Right.
How do you manage that? How do you manage to keep looking for work and then also working on stuff? It's a hard balance to find.
It is a hard balance to find. And I'm still learning it every single day. And obviously, it goes with the times that you're in, right, in terms of what you need to achieve.
Yeah.
I prioritize it based off of how can I make money today? And I know, so I mean, I've worked at Sam Ash. I instruct piano part-time. I would like to transition into just doing like music theory, you know, private help for folks. But I think it's just more of the focus. I'm an only child, so my mom always told me, it's like, go in your room and find something constructive to do. And I think that upbringing, I was making toys out of, you know, tissue boxes. I don't know what else to do. But I think with that mindset and that upbringing, I've kind of just moved that entire niceness of that discipline to whatever I do every day. And so I know that I need to stay busy, and obviously I don't know everything, so I'll look at YouTube, you know, tutorials on maybe a plugin that I didn't get to understand that well because maybe I was so just trying to create really fast. And then if I discover something that will lead to different creativity, and then that creativity will produce a track, and then next thing I know I have a track finished, because I could do a track a day pretty much, like, at least like mixed and everything from conception, if I sit down and think about it properly. And then with just, you know, the typical networking of things, there's been a lot of stuff now. Like, I don't even sign up for everything as much as I did in January. But now people are familiar, and I guess understanding that people want a virtual events, and the one's not really going much of anywhere. So you can just sign up for stuff and just hang out and talk to people and then learn different things that way. I think just staying curious and disciplined in the right of understanding what your priorities are, really just the balance overall in terms of what you need to take care of. So obviously, you know, working, and then if you need, you know, if keeping up your relationships, saying hi to a friend here and there, especially when they pop in your mind. And I usually try to promote this a lot. Someone pops in your mind and you've met them and you obviously are, you know, on a good terms, you know, say, drop them a line, just say, what's up, how's it going? It doesn't take a lot to, you know, text. People get back to you when they can, but at least if you people like to be thought of and people appreciate that. And I think that's really goes a long way, especially because then you end up getting recommended for jobs. Like I got that job at the pandemic because I did that exact thing and that person remembered me.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's all about, like, I mean, I have to touch on that. I must say, when you're saying about when you think of someone to message them, I think we put too much pressure on we should only message when we have enough to say, or like, oh no, it has to be a big hangout or like a proper like hour long talk. It can't just be like a quick message, but it can be, you know, you can just easily keep in touch with a quick message, even when you think of someone briefly, you know?
Right.
It doesn't always have to be a huge like meeting that you have to set up.
Exactly. Yeah. And everybody's very, very busy. Like we were talking about earlier, like even though in the times that we're in, you know, it is very busy for a lot of people because we're all trying to, you know, stay afloat and manage ourselves. And I think not think about everything else that's happening outside, you know, and affecting others. But yes, just especially during now, dropping a line to say hi goes an extremely long way. And after the pandemic and everything is over, people, I think, will definitely remember that a lot and appreciate that because we're all human. We all, you know, we'd like to chat, but, you know, at the same time, it's like just saying, hey, thought of you today. Just, you know, want to say hello. You know, no pressure here. Just, you know, just wanted to make sure you're doing okay. And that's it.
And just to follow up on that as well, like how has the atmosphere been for you in the current situation? And how have you managed to like keep afloat, as you say, like, and just kind of keep working and keep busy and focusing on that? Obviously, it's a very, very weird time right now.
Yeah, like I was saying earlier, is just showing up to just attending some of these events that are happening on Zoom or many conferences that you may have not been able to even attend in person. Most of them are free, can go a long way.
Yeah, and definitely.
Just, you know, like I was saying, and then you're meeting people or catching up, you know, with even some, you may see some names and they're like, oh yeah, I did think about the person. You have a reason to meet now, right? And like, yeah. I said, though, those connections and those friendships, you know, will take you quite far. And I'm hoping that the industry overall is going to adopt remote work. You know, I've actually seen so many jobs posted this year than I've ever seen in my 9-year career outside of this. It's crazy. Like on Discord,
so many with remote options as well.
Yes, all remote, and it's so fantastic to see because a lot of people do need work, and a lot. I'm just hoping that the right people, you know, obviously that are qualified and more, you know, that people want to get started, especially like, you know, students, because I've seen that was a big kind of issue, you know, intern versus student and, you know, get right out of school and then veteran work and all this other stuff that, you know, kind of moves around. I'm hoping that everybody has an opportunity to, like I say, eat.
Yeah, definitely. Man, it's been such a weird transition. And like, I can't even imagine how it is for some composers out there, because obviously this is for films and games and everything. It's how you kind of find your work and how you keep busy, and you're freelancing away, and then this thing hits and productions slow down, and you know, you have to juggle so much.
Yeah, Sam, you mentioned a good point though. Actually thinking there's a lot of jobs, but there's not a lot of composer jobs. There's some sound design jobs, but there's not a lot of composer jobs. And I don't actually know, I wonder what your thought process on this is. I don't know why they're not posted. It's almost as if people start a game, find the composer first so that they don't want to be asked or floored, because I always hear this a lot. It's like I get emails every day asking if they need a composer, you know, for such projects. And it's a hard world out there to find work for, as such. But I have no idea why those jobs, it's just like a secret taboo. It doesn't matter if it's AAA or indie, like they're just not posted, or they're very rarely, rarely posted. But anything from environmental artist to Unity programmer to marketing community manager is out there for you right now.
Yeah, man, it's the kind of nature of the beast in a way, isn't it? It's kind of similar with voice acting as well. Sometimes you don't always see the casting calls, or they're very, very vague. And then with composition, I guess it's similar with the freelancers that come in on a kind of music form. I guess it's just come over from films maybe as well, because they don't advertise for film composers either. Usually you don't see like a post going composer wanted. And I guess because of the nature of the industry, it was one of those kind of careers where it was always like started off with, oh, do you know someone who does music? All right, yeah, can we get them to do this film? And so people were just kind of getting each other's contacts or friends. And I guess it kind of stayed that way, even though we've got into a more technology focused industry. We still kind of have a load of old habits, you know, and obviously the secrecy part as well, like, you know, NDAs and all this, people don't want to publicly post it. But, you know, as you say, like audio teams, community managers, you know, they all have to sign NDAs and go for interviews and things. So it's an interesting question you've raised for sure.
Yeah, it's been vacillating in my mind quite a bit. And I've just been wondering, it's good to kind of have, you know, this back in this, your opinion on it more so, and thinking outside of my own head, at least about it, because I'd like to hear more perspectives and at least try to bring some more light to it to see what's kind of happening. But you raise all good points.
Yeah, I mean, I'm only just guessing off the top of my head. And to be honest, I'm also thinking that maybe because it's such a highly competitive field as well, if you put a job post for a composer, you're going to get so much response. I think maybe that's part of it as well. Who knows? I'm purely guessing.
Oh, I'm pretty sure you're going to get a high response, absolutely. But I can't think that the competitiveness for art isn't the same, at least, because the same accessible tools, you know, I would think, you know, to do the craft that you need to do is, at least in my opinion, equal. But yet there's still a specific, you know, yet there's more postings for those type of positions than the former.
Yeah, I'd be curious to find out if there was actually a confirmed reason or whether it's just the way that things are done. But I have seen it very rarely, like a couple of posts here and there, like a composer position advertised through not quite a job site, but more of like a job site for production.
Yeah, like we've seen a couple here and there. Like we saw, what was it, Gearbox posted a thing earlier this year or last year, and then Hexany Audio, you know, sometimes posts, you know, for that. And even I think Bungie may have come up with some things like that too.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, if anyone else out there knows the answer, I'd love to know as well. So feel free to comment. So sadly, I'm drawing to my final question for you now, Chase, which I like to ask all my guests, because it always brings around some really curious answers. So if you could go back in time and give your young self any piece of advice, what would it be?
Figure out how to get into the industry now. I think it's funny you asked that question to me, because it's something that I thought a lot about. And I think about a very specific time. I mentioned the early 2000s, I was playing MTV Music Generator, I was playing Sonic the Hedgehog Dreamcast, was sampling a bunch of video game stuff, music, listening to it all still, you know, at least in 2000, 2001, figuring out emulators, not knowing what those are, hearing it in magazines, having the equipment. And I pretty much had all the tools, and I was only 15 or 16 to at least get a demo out, to at least start writing some kind of game music. I could have been one of those earlier composers on Newgrounds that would have gotten into the industry at that age. And if I could, and I truly believe this in my entire heart, literally leaving this room right now, I'd go back to that time and say, do it now. Figure it out now. The book was already out, the book that I ended up discovering later, which is A Complete Guide to Game Audio by Aaron Marks. I just have to hear that little voice in my head would say, do it now. Because I was already told that my music should sound like it's been a video game from the first electronic music, and when I say electronic or computer music that I already wrote, the first time I actually printed it to CD and I showed it to someone, is the first thing someone had said to me. And I should have said, and to figure it out, do it now.
And that's something I've always actually considered myself even. And I do wonder though, because there's always that butterfly effect thought, right? Whereas you wouldn't be where you are or who you are now if something in the past changed. So it's always interesting to see what people say with this question.
That's very true. My girlfriend mentioned that the same. She's like, well, we probably wouldn't have met and you would have been on a different path for this. And then all I could think about is I feel somewhat different about it. I feel very strongly. I was like, well, I also would have avoided a lot of heartache because I was very focused on girls back then. So I don't know. Maybe we would have just met at the right time.
Oh, man. Well, I have to say, Chase, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show, and I hope we can have you back again soon.
I love that so much. Thank you so much, Sam. It was a great honor and a wonderful time.
Hey everyone, this is Sam. Thanks very much for listening to the Sound Architect podcast today. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If so, there are many ways you can support the show, which is incredibly appreciated. Obviously, there's the financial way where you can support us on Patreon, which is patreon.com/sounddesignuk. However, there are many other ways which also help, such as liking, subscribing, reviewing, commenting, and sharing via whatever channel you listen on. Even a like or share on social media really, really helps. So thanks so much for your support already. It really is a work of passion for me, and I'd love to keep sharing the knowledge from all these talented and wonderful people. Thanks again, and catch you on the next episode.
Hi, this is Michael Helms, host of the Location Sound Podcast. Recently, I spoke with production sound mixer and sound designer Pamela Shing Berman, based out of Los Angeles, California. She talks about pivoting during COVID-19 and producing content for She Votes and also her involvement with Women in Audio. Check out the latest episode.
Hey, this is Christian from a Sound Effect podcast. In our latest episode, you will hear about designing sound for Netflix series The Crown and composing music for The Haunting of Bly Manor. Check it out at soundeffect.com/podcast.